Hello, friends. Today is the 17th of July, 2013. I'm beginning with Esoteric Astrology Adventure 122A. We've been in a very interesting area of the book. We've been discussing here. I thought I had those for sure. We've been on page 465, and we have been looking at a certain figure which deals with the great constellation of Sirius, Pleiades, Great Bear, and the means of working through into our solar system. Through certain zodiacal signs, through actually three triangles and six zodiacal signs. These are the primary ways in which there is an expression from the great cosmic triangle of Sirius, Pleiades, Great Bear into our solar system. But we do also remember that the Sirian line passes through a Pisces in another tabulation, 18-fold tabulation. We remember that the Pleiades passes through Capricorn. So not only does Sirius pass through Capricorn in this configuration, but the Pleiades does as well, aligning with Mercury, and that the Great Bear passes through Leo. So perhaps these other constellations should be considered related to the ones that are here given. And in general, what this is all about, returning here to page 460, is this particular triangle, or double triangle, the whole idea of how a lower triangle is evoked by the action of a higher triangle. And this particular triangle operates in relation to man, to the planetary logos, to the solar logos, and to the zodiacal constellations and their lords and beyond. So it is really an archetypal figure and something that always has to be considered, and I've gone into considerable detail about the flow of energies here and the possible reciprocal flow of energies which are not really given in this particular diagram, but it becomes pretty clear, for instance, that when you look at the upreaching of the Antikorana towards the emanating center, there is also a downreaching towards this upreaching magnetic center, very definitely so. And there is a dual arrow here as the magnetic center, which is, I have called it the disciple within the personality, begins to interact with the soul on its own plane in the process of soul infusion. So I think we can see that that particular diagram could not be presented exactly as it is, or it would have to be divided into two diagrams or three to illustrate the way the arrows were focused or pointed at any time in the process. Meanwhile, DK has given this extensive, very deep, from 460 on, analysis of the flows in the triangle, double triangle, diamond-like, which we have been considering. So now we are, we've been talking about the connection of the first triangle, Cancer, Capricorn, and Saturn, to average man verging towards the probationary path. We then have talked about the Gemini-Sagittarius Mercury triangle, which allows the probationary disciple to pass on to the path of accepted discipleship. And now we are at the point where we can talk about the Aries-Libra-Sun triangle, which is an expression of the Great Bear, and the The sun is seen to be veiling Vulcan, as we see if we look on page 50 of Esoteric Astrology. And it brings about that focusing in the energy of the life of the disciple, which makes it possible for him to function consciously and with intention upon the path of initiation. So what we are learning here is that all of these triangles, of these three triangles, are, well, let's call them this, triangles of transition from the average man to the probationary disciple. And from the probationary disciple to the accepted, oh, that's the accepting disciple, I'll make it easier, accepted disciple, from the accepted disciple to the initiate. Triangles of transition. We are all in transition, are we not? We have reached a certain status of evolutionary unfoldment, and because of the spirit within us, which is never satisfied until it returns to exactly what it is, we are reaching towards a still higher state. So some of these triangles can help us do that. And we have to realize the relationship of the triangle to our own particular case. It's not too hard to do if we are careful and truthful with ourselves. So he enters the realm of the formless worlds because Aries, the sign of beginnings, makes this possible. Yes, entering into the fiery worlds via this fire sign. Now, can we call the higher mental plane formless? Not really. So the question is one of pure being, really. Aries acquaints the individual with the nature of pure being. It has a peculiar relationship to that. When I think about its rulership of the soul of India, which is a Raywan soul, the emphasis, spiritual emphasis in that great country, when we consider the highest of the spiritual contributions, has been upon the great Brahman, pure being. And Aries and the first ray correlate with that. So it's the sign of beginnings, and that makes this possible. Through the potency of Libra, he has succeeded in achieving that point of balance, which makes the final escape from the pairs of opposites possible. Now, this is the final escape. And Uranus, whoop, no good. Uranus, which is a ruler in both cases of Aries and Libra, rules the what's called the final burning ground. And every burning ground is preparing the road for escape into a higher sphere or higher dimension of expression and realization. He now knows through transcended feeling and from identification with the seen vision the true meaning of being. And this, to some of us Aries individuals at certain times, this means a lot. I'll make that larger. So, very interesting that these are triangles that assist us to move along the path, and I suppose should be identified within the chart if we sense ourselves to be responsive to or subject to one of these triangles, and see how more specifically it may be working out in our lives. So we've had Sirius moving through, let's see, where are we here? Got to find my way back, don't I? 465. We have Sirius moving through Cancer, Capricorn, and Saturn. The Pleiades, which is in a way, interestingly, out of the alignment. This is the point off to the right, at which it is stationed, working through Gemini, Sagittarius, and Mercury, and the Great Bear, working through Aries, Libra, and the Sun, veiling Vulcan. And what we understand by this is that, interestingly, Sirius is upholding the, relative to this triangle, the kind of monastic position. The Pleiades has much of cosmic Buddhi in it. Matter of fact, I think I'll just kind of go to a text, which I believe is Cosmic Fire, 1162. And here we have something that I have been underlining. And it's like this. The energy centers of the solar logos are themselves in the form of vast lotuses, or wheels at the center of which lie hidden that central cosmic life we call a planetary logos, really a cosmic being, after all. Think about that. Although it's planetary and intra-systemic, it's considered a cosmic life. He is the meeting place for two types of force, spiritual or logoic, which reaches him via the logoic lotus on the cosmic mental plane from the seven rishis of the Great Bear on their own plane. And he's being a little bit veiling here, because their own plane might be considered to be from, let's see if I can do this correctly. I'm going to go back to my pictures. And they are found in Fellowship of Cosmic Fire, and okay, the diagrams. And we might say, okay, their own plane is the cosmic Buddhic plane. But what is said here in following does not make this seem to be the case. Their own plane, and secondly, of Buddhic force, cosmic Buddhic force, which is transmitted via the seven sisters of the Pleiades from a constellation called the Dragon in some books, and from which has come the appellation Dragon of Wisdom, who contains this dragon power and also the Buddhic force. So we are not speaking of systemic Buddhi at all. We are talking about the Pleiades being focused on the cosmic Buddhic plane, and I believe, at least it's my present hypothesis, that the major focus of the Great Bear is on the cosmic atmic plane, which correlates with the first ray, and which is not given in this particular chart for other reasons. You kind of wonder, if we're talking about chakras, whether the vortex that creates the chakra can avoid creating one on a plane superior to the one on which it finds itself expressing. So if the Great Bear rishis are expressing on the cosmic Buddhic plane as chakras in the great life of the one about whom naught may be said, can they avoid creating vortexes on the cosmic atmic plane through which they've had to descend? Obviously, these are just words. You know, we barely know what atma is on our own systemic planes right down here. But we have to use the maps and use the mind at first, and then trust that the realization of the associated energy will dawn upon our consciousness, the energy associated with the words we use. Anyway, going back to Esoteric Astrology, page 465, and to this particular figure. See, DK, he gives us many different triangles. And as I say, they appear in different contexts. And the signs of the zodiac appear in a number of different triangles. And the signs have different functions in different triangles. So this is a six-fold series, which is very important. Three triangles, and a triangle is made also then of Saturn, Mercury, and Vulcan, or Saturn, Mercury, and Sun. But Saturn, Mercury, and Vulcan is very Capricornian in a way. If you think about it, Saturn is the major ruler of Capricorn. Mercury is that planet through which the Pleiades, Capricorn, transmits their energy in another tabulation. And the Sun is standing for Vulcan, but both the Sun and Vulcan, interestingly, are associated with the final decanate, the initiatory decanate in Capricorn, ruled by the eagle, Aquila the eagle, I think a good association. And Mercury, the Sun, and Vulcan are all found in association with that third decanate. And Saturn, with the first decanate, and Venus with the with the second decanate. So there's a strong alliance of all these factors with the sign Capricorn. Maybe that's a secondary matter, but you can trace certain planets and their triangles back to certain signs, and then naturally they will be expressing, those signs will be expressing, or signs constellations will be expressing through those planets. It is very intricate, and of course we have to find the way that the human being is really using these energies, and if alerted to the fact that the energies trace themselves back to certain signs or constellations of the zodiac, can they, in some useful way, invoke those planetary and zodiacal signs? Can they recognize them working out in their life? There's so much of astrology that is beneath the surface, the obvious recognitions. There's a whole network of interrelated energies with certain functions that are part and parcel of esoteric astrology, which are totally overlooked when it comes to the conventional approach to astrology. But then one has to know something about the soul and spirit to use esoteric astrology. Otherwise, one is just applying these higher relationships to the personality level, which will not make sense. So we have this relationship which allows the accepted disciple to pass into initiatory status and become one who, having transcended feeling and having understood identification, and identification with the vision that he sees, understands the meaning of true being. Now, this is the relationship of Aries to the third initiation and the realization of being. Libra is a Shambhalic sign, in a way, because it governs the royal road into Shambhala, the first realization of which comes with the monad, the consciousness of the monad at the third initiation. And the Great Bear is also involved in inclining one towards the realization of true being. It's something that every student of occultism who's been with it for a while could be working on, this realization of the substratum, of the substanding, of the reality out of which all things emerge as being descends to manifest. Interesting, Aries, a sign of manifestation in terms of its seventh ray. At least the idea for what is to be manifested is accentuated in Aries. So, this threefold process can also be covered by the words sensitivity, illumination, and inspiration. Somehow, an excellent three words. And I find them very inspiring. Sensitivity relates to the first triangle. And we know that Leo, so connected with Sirius, is the sign of sensitivity. Illumination with the second triangle. And we understand Mercury as a source of illumination, and have to understand the light of the Pleiades in that regard as well. Although Sirius so often in his brilliance relative to our solar system is considered the illuminator. And finally, the Great Bear. And this is inspiration, is related to the spirit and to the first aspect. Well, the true spirit may not be the first aspect at all. It may be the first expression of the spirit. Spirit may be that which lies behind the first aspect, and will may be the first expression of the spirit. Inspiration related to the sun, the inspiration. It seems to me the breathing in of the spirit. That's what we're talking about here. And the breath of life. The breath of life. Is contacted. And with it, the cosmic ethers. Because that's really where life is found in greater measure than through the dense physical levels of the planetary logos and solar logos. At least it's less inhibited on the cosmic ethers, which are ruled by Uranus. In a way, when you look at that Aries Libra Sun triangle, we know from page 50 that Vulcan is the ruler, but Uranus wouldn't be a bad ruler either. It is the hierarchical ruler of Aries and the esoteric ruler of Libra, and it is often a substitute for the Sun. The solar power is expressed on the logoic plane, and the logoic plane is one that we can easily associate with Uranus. If we take the three synthesizing planets and use Uranus for the logoic, Neptune for the monadic, and Saturn appropriately for the atomic plane. So Uranus is involved here. You know, sometimes when you look at page 70 or 71 of Esoteric Astrology, you see a kind of statement about what happens at the third initiation. And it says, at the third initiation, the moon, veiling a hidden planet, and Mars bring about a fearful conflict. But at the end, the man is released from personality control. Now, there's reason to think, in one respect, that it is Vulcan. Because it's a hidden planet, and not just veiling a planet, but a hidden planet. But from another point of view, at the third degree, one is meeting Uranus or the Hierophant. The Hierophant is symbolized by Uranus at that point. The Christ is symbolized by Neptune as the initiator for the first two initiations, and from that time on, the initiator is bringing the initiate candidate onto the cosmic ethers, which are ruled by Uranus. So Uranus could be involved here. The moon does veil Uranus in the type of individual who could possibly undergo the third initiation, have to be strongly mentally polarized. And yet, Vulcan is probably the proper planet in this particular case, bringing about a great expression of light in the first ray aspect, a kind of an overpowering light, blinding light, as St. Paul experienced at this point on the road to Damascus. You kind of wonder, you know, he was going there to persecute those who had taken up the following of Jesus, but he was stopped in his tracks by the Christ who was to use him as the 12th disciple, taking the place of Judas. All of that is quite intricate, maybe a little difficult to understand, but DK tells us that Paul took the place of Judas. So obviously Judas did have some guilt, regardless of the various ways that now appear to explain his betrayal of the Christ as ordered by the Christ, in order for the prophecy to be fulfilled, for the scripture to be fulfilled. Well, we're really touching on one interesting group of energies after another, and of course we don't want them to remain strictly as abstractions, something that it's nice to know. I remember my old teacher. I've had two great teachers in my life, you know, one here right on the planet. He got me started in all this a long time ago. Six planets in Pisces and Leo rising. Whew! First ray. And then Master DK, as so many of us feel about him as the teacher. And this earlier teacher offered the living example of identification. I've never met anybody in life on the physical plane who actually walked around in the state of identification. That was the great teaching. When I summarize it all, and I look at, this is 50 years ago, if you think about Pisces and Leo, and how much they could promote the state of isolated unity and of identification, this man had it. And if I think about all the different things that he taught me, he was more like a darshan, you know, maybe than specific items, although many items of information come back to me. But he taught me identification, and he made it possible, or inspired in me, the realization that the realization that identification was the great factor in life. And he used to quote something. I guess I'm off on a tangent, right? What else? Let's see. Let's see if I can find this. And this is, this was by Clymer, but I'm not sure that I'm going to find it here. Clymer, look upon my face and die. I once found it. C-L-Y, Clymer. Look upon my face. I wonder if I do find it. No, and maybe a C-L-Y-M-B-E-R. C-L-Y-M-C-L. Oh, off on a tangent. I did find it once, you know. But it looks like I'm not going to find it now. Okay, I did manage to find it. It's not by Clymer. It's maybe it was quoted in one of his books. This is from John G. Neihardt, The Ghostly Brother. And these are the words that led me to the whole study of identification. They come at the end, but I'll read this last stanza. Brother, brother, follow hence, ours the wild unflagging speed. Through the outer walls of sense, follow, follow, where I lead. Love and hate and grief and fear, 'tis the geocentric dream. Only shadows linger here, cast by the eternal gleam. Follow, follow, follow fast, somewhere out of time and place. You shall lift the veil at last. You shall look upon my face. Look upon my face and die. Solver of the mystery, I am you and you are I. Brother, brother, follow me. Well, that was the inspiration that I received from this man. And it did make all the difference, leading me into the esoteric field. But, you know, it's one thing to talk about things and another to be an embodiment of those things, of those energies. And that's what we all strive for, to be an embodiment of the energies which first must be approached theoretically, but then one day the veil shall lift, and one will not only see those energies, one will be those energies, be them. One already is, but one doesn't realize it. And that's the issue, to realize what we actually are. Another group of energies can be touched upon, though any elucidation is not possible. They concern the focused energies of the seven solar systems, of which ours is one. These energies, any elucidation is not possible. Okay. That's quite a statement. And these seven energies are differently interpreted. Sometimes they are interpreted as being systems of stars which are constellational and include Orion and Little Bear and, the Great Bear. Some elucidation has been given. The Pleiades, Sirius, but they are sometimes considered to be the chakras of the one about whom naught may be said. I personally also interpret them as actual solar systems, and not as systems of stars, but as a group in which seven major stars are found, as well as perhaps many others of lesser degree. They concern the focused energies of the seven solar systems, of which ours is one. These energies, six in number, reach our solar system via the constellations Taurus and Scorpio and the planet Mars. And this we have seen when we go to page 50. They are listed below. The dynamic energy of Sirius, Great Bear, and Pleiades, or as we have them listed now, Sirius, Pleiades, Great Bear. And all the above energies are called into play as far as man is concerned during the major initiations upon the path of initiation. And all of the above energy is called into play here as far as man is concerned. Maybe for others it's something different, other beings, whilst he is in training as the disciple and upon the path of discipleship. And so in a way these seven solar systems cannot be greater than the three sources of dynamic energy. And if we consider this to be a tenfold system, we would add the Sirius, Pleiades, and Great Bear to seven other constellations down here. But from another point of view, these could be actually seven solar systems, including such stars as our Sun, Sirius, Alpha Centauri, Procyon, and other stars upon which astrologers tend to speculate. So I do interpret them as actual solar systems which have an effect upon certain planets in our solar system, which have an effect upon the disciple. This is magnetic. Sometimes the word magnetic is associated with solar fire, sometimes even with the third ray, and essentially even with the first ray. True magnetism, he tells us, is related to the first ray. So let's see what else Master DK says about these seven solar systems. He says, their peculiar nature, objective in evolution, and basic purpose is only revealed to initiates above the fifth initiation. And yet we see that it is a lesser grouping than the three great constellations of Sirius, Pleiades, and Great Bear, because it pertains to developments on the path of discipleship and not to developments so much on the path of initiation. Is it only then, above the fifth initiation, that we, above the fifth initiation, or maybe beyond it, but not quite to the sixth, that we learn about the true nature of the stars which surround us? They are concerned with the problem of desire, to which humanity, which is to humanity a problem, but not in its higher octaves. And with the transmutation of spiritual will into divine purpose. We've already read quite a bit about the relationship of Taurus to the desire factor, and how it turns out to evolve into spiritual aspiration and intelligent activity and finally illumination. So, usually, one constellation in this list of constellations is passing through two zodiacal constellations and a planet. The Pleiades, a great constellation, through two and a planet, and the Great Bear through two zodiacal constellations and a planet. Why should it not be so in the case of the seven solar systems, that they are only one constellation with seven stars and not seven other constellations, too much, out of proportion, passing through two solar systems and a planet? So I think of them as the solar plexus of the one about whom naught may be said, including our local stars, our sun and local stars, and maybe including Sirius. I tend to think so. And that these seven stars, making one constellation, pass through Taurus and through Scorpio and deal with the whole problem of desire and its transmutation into spiritual will and divine purpose. we certainly know that Taurus is involved with that type of transmutation. So it's as if the seven together are working through Taurus and Scorpio. You know, I continue to say, when you look in our physical body, our etheric body, and you look at the solar plexus center, it is certainly subject to that center in the head, which is a higher form of solar plexus center within the occult head. Then you look at the zodiac here. One of the places the zodiac expresses is in the heart and the head center of the human being, and each petal is attuned to a zodiacal constellation, and each petal is powerful. Is any one of those petals, well, certainly all 12 together, are more powerful than a solar plexus in our own system? Is any one of those more powerful than a solar plexus? And what would be the method of transmission by which a solar plexus passes to a zodiacal center within the heart and the head, and then elsewhere? It seems to be a reversal of the right direction. I still haven't worked out the proportion here of power, the proportion of power, the hierarchical status of different beings or centers within our own etheric body. Because it is established that the solar plexus in the head is more powerful than our own solar plexus. Now, the solar plexus in the head of the one about whom naught may be said will be the star Merik, the sixth ray star. And it, in a way, should be more powerful than any constellation which represents the solar plexus per se, and the one about whom naught may be said. But we have a magnitude problem, because we're dealing just with one star in the Great Bear. Remember, the seven stars of the Great Bear are the seven head centers of the one about whom naught may be said. So we have Merik, a single star. In a way, it's a controlling center, in a way controlling the entire solar plexus, which has to be constellational in the one about whom naught may be said. There's a problem in magnitude. Can one star, or the logos of one star, control the whole constellation? I can see how the whole Great Bear, representing all the seven head centers and the one about whom naught may be said, can control a constellation, but can one of those stars control a constellation? Let's just see. We'll just take a little look here as to where we find this. Great Bear Head Centers. And the seven head centers correspond in the microcosm to the seven rishis of the Great Bear, the prototypes of the seven heavenly men, and the centers above enumerated. It should be remembered that all these centers have their correspondences in etheric matter and are found in the region of the head. He's being a little bit, you know, vague. As I've said, there are centers maybe within the head and centers above the head that are symbolized by a certain Tibetan headdress. And that it is when these seven head centers are awakened that their counterparts are also safely awakened. These seven head centers correspond in the microcosm to the seven rishis of the Great Bear, within what type of being? That's the question. And our solar system with the Pleiades and one of the stars in the Great Bear form a cosmic triangle, or an aggregation of the three centers in the body of him of whom naught may be said. The seven stars and the constellation of the Great Bear are the correspondences to the seven head centers in the body of that being, greater than our Logos. And there it is, page 182 of A Treatise on Cosmic Fire. And here quoted again at the end of Esoteric Astrology, where the cosmic fire references having to do with astrology are gathered, correspond to the seven head centers of this great entity. So while it's pretty sure that the entire Great Bear could master anyone, you know, that this is the greatest of the head centers, and therefore can master any other center in a human being, and presumably any other constellation of stars representing the other centers in the body of the one about whom nothing said. Still, we have the issue of whether there is the solar plexus controlling center, which is simply one star of the Great Bear, can in some way master or control the entire solar plexus center, which is a constellation, and which I am hypothesizing to be our local seven solar systems, of which ours is one. Well, perhaps there's the whole power of the Great Bear behind that one Logos, as it does direct the process of the solar plexus center. We certainly do have a problem with desire on our planet and in our solar system. Our solar system is a being whose desire nature is very powerful. It's an astrobuddhic solar system. We don't know whether analogically our solar logos has passed the midway point between the second and third initiation. Maybe in a way that's what it's all about at the present time. We do know he seems to be passing through a kind of fourth initiation within our planetary scheme, but it's a lesser group of initiations. So we are not yet, perhaps, cosmically mentally polarized, just as a human being is not mentally polarized until passing the midway point between the second and third initiations. Anyway, not much is said about these seven solar systems, and it's a very blinded area. Some people, as I say, have gone on and thought that every solar system is really a great constellation. While I think that is possible, it doesn't look right to me because it doesn't add up when you look at what expresses through what. As I've said, each one of these three is expressing through two zodiacal constellations. So how is it then that seven constellations would express through only two zodiacal constellations and a planet, a non-circular one at that, when of the three great constellations, each one of them expresses through two and a planet? The comparison doesn't seem correct to me. But anyway, they are concerned with the problem of desire, which is to humanity a problem, but not in its higher octaves. Maybe there are higher octaves of the problem of desire. Certainly the Buddha came to us to teach us how to handle desire per se, the kind of desire that we normally deal with. They are the originators of conflict. They are the originators of conflict. Now, a lot of fourth ray goes through them because of the two constellations, if you think about it. Taurus brings in the fourth ray only, as far as we're concerned, and have been told, although other rays may be there, as I've talked about. Scorpio brings in the fourth ray, though other rays may be there. It's the major fourth ray conduit, constellationally. Fourth ray, conflict. And Mars, conflict. They are the originators of conflict, are closely connected with the fourth ray of harmony through conflict, and are therefore in a peculiar relation to the fourth creative hierarchy. Well, you know, Hercules was one teacher, a Scorpionic teacher. identified with that cosmic decanate we call Scorpio, our constellation Scorpio. Buddha was a Taurian teacher, the great light, identified with one of the cosmic decanates as well. So two of the three teachers about whom DK says so much are connected with these two constellations, zodiacal constellations. And hence, in a way, are representatives of the seven solar systems, of which ours is one. To me, a solar system, at face value, is a star and a grouping of planets. Maybe if there are two stars, you can call it a constellation, there can be maybe two stars and groupings of planets. You know, I think that's a gray area. Is it a solar system? Because there are, you know, these double stars. As a matter of fact, they outnumber these single stars. They are systems. Are they constellations or double systems? To me, it makes most sense to say a solar system, one star, a double system, two star, and beyond that, a constellation. So they are in a peculiar relation to the fourth creative hierarchy, which really has to solve the problem of desire, which holds it to the matter forms from the previous solar system. So they're in a peculiar relation to hierarchy, human, and to our Earth in this fourth round. Because in this fourth round, this problem of desire is being solved. From one perspective, the solar plexus, which is the seat of desire, although the sacral is also the seat of some lower desires, is the fourth from the base of the spine. The fifth from above. If we count the spleen, the fourth from the base of the spine. So we have base of the spine, sacral center, spleen, solar plexus, the fourth. And it certainly is an area where much conflict is produced, though where the power to harmonize that conflict is generally not found, more in the heart center or in the Ajna center is the power to harmonize found. So, you know, I'm just pondering here on these seven solar systems. My colleague Nicholas and I have tried to work out which stars are involved. We have also included Altair, Fomalo, Vega, maybe. Vega's quite far, 26 light years perhaps, and the others are much closer. I don't know about Fomalo, I think closer. And my colleague Peter Kubaska has other views of which stars constitute the seven solar systems, agreeing in some measure with the ones I just mentioned, but offering others. One of the stars in the constellation Eridanus. Anyway, that's a technical matter, and you can consult with them about their opinions. Suffice it to say, in my view, these seven solar systems are indeed stars. And they do together form a solar plexus center, in the one about whom not may be said. And the problems of that solar plexus center are being worked out, as far as we're concerned, through Taurus and Scorpio, the constellations Taurus and Scorpio. And I'm wondering, you know, in a way, whereas the entire heart and the head center directs, can direct any of the other chakras, it being the most powerful of all the chakric centers, so that's the zodiac together as extremely powerful. Can it be that in some way there's a line of energy connecting, let's say, our local solar plexus or cosmic logos with any one of the constellations, so that in some way these zodiacal constellations singly are less powerful than the other chakras? I'm rather, you know, consumed with this hierarchicalization of power and scope. And it's not easy to determine which are the most powerful, which are the most developed stellar and constellational logoi, we only know a little bit about the relative development of our planetary logoi, and not very much. You know, it's just that they are separated into three separate categories, which are the non-sacreds, the sacreds, and the synthesizing, which are a form of sacred planet of a higher nature. But in terms of, and we know that Venus is more developed than Earth, and Earth more developed than Mars, the logos thereof, the logoi thereof, more developed. But we're not given too much more. We can infer that the logos of Sirius is more developed than that of Venus, as it's still a still more occult planet and older in a sense. When it comes to Jupiter and Saturn, it's difficult to know, but maybe Saturn is the father of Jupiter. And Saturn is, in a way, the oldest of the synthesizing planets, or at least the one whose unfoldment began earlier. But is it necessarily, logoically considered, more developed, higher in status than the logos of Neptune or of Uranus? Or is it simply that it unfolded earlier? Well, we can make inferences about the relative degree of development of these planetary logoi. But, you know, when it comes to solar logoi, well, you know, Sirius is more developed than the logos of our sun, yes. But what about when we compare such stars as Fomalhaut, Vega, Altair, Procyon, Alpha Centauri? You know, we're in the dark there, pretty much. We can make maybe intelligent inferences. But there is a status. There's always a status of unfoldment, a spiritual status for each of the beings on a certain level of development. We could say solar logoi are together on a certain level of development. And sometimes maybe DK is trying to tell us something in terms of orders. You know, something may be of the second order, something may be of the fourth order. We have a fourth order solar logos. Is Sirius then a fifth order solar logos? I think he said something about Betelgeuse as being of the second order. If that is the case, then the lower the order, the higher the development of the logos concerned, in which case it wouldn't make sense to call Sirius as of the fifth order, would it? Because we know Sirius is more developed, and certainly Betelgeuse is more developed than, or higher in spiritual status than either our solar logos or the logos of Sirius. See, so much has to be learned astronomically and cosmically about these beings, and then perhaps the psycho-spiritual aspect of their nature can also be revealed. Well, anyway, you know, this has been a lengthy speculation about the seven solar systems, of which ours is one. And he, like he just says, their peculiar nature, objective and evolution and basic purposes only revealed to those beyond the fifth initiation, those who have taken the fifth initiation. Of course, if we think about it, does he mean only to sixth-degree initiates? Because there the problem of desire would be discussed, the relationship of desire and will from one perspective, the monad being the number six and the plane of desire, the number six. I'm talking about planes here. So there's a numerical resonance there between the number six and maybe as a, Chohan, the problem of desire would be dealt with, this desire in a large planetary sense. And we can say that the Buddha had been a fifth degree initiate for 2,500 years approximately. He was ending his 2,500 year term in those days when he was manifesting through Gautama. So when did the Buddha really begin to teach about desire? Was it not after his illumination, in which, I believe, he took the sixth initiation with a touch from the cosmic mental plane? It was only then, I think, when he became truly a Chohan of the sixth degree, that he really tackled this whole issue of human desire, until that time, he was working his way there. In a way, this whole life was about him moving from the fifth degree to the sixth degree, and probably Prince Siddhartha or Gautama moving from the third degree to the fourth degree. So it seems to me, one must make conjectures, and they will be in time proven to be correct or incorrect. Meanwhile, one can hold them as working hypotheses. So this whole question of the seven solar systems seems very related to the Buddha through the constellation Taurus, and hence through the tenth of the, the third of the liberated hierarchies, Aries, Pisces, Aries, Taurus hierarchy, 12, 11, 10. These are mysteries, really interesting, because it's always interesting to know the source from which the inner energy comes. We can't do too much about it except to attune to it via the Devic stream, which allows us to attune to such energies. But there's so much working out in our solar system about the number four and the conflict involved with the number four and the attempt to harmonize it and to move on in a way to the number five. Our solar logos has not moved on to the number five. You're still trapped in the number four. And the whole issue of cosmic desire is probably pretty strong. We will know one day whether at this time he has passed what I call the temptations in the desert. My colleague, Keith Bailey, suggested to me that these were really the tests of the Christ, and I believe they were. So in a way, they were on a whole higher turn of the spiral, but he was still acting out something. Even Master Jesus could have acted that out, couldn't he? Because he was already a third-degree initiate from the time of being Joshua the high priest. So he could have acted out or demonstrated for humanity something about the fight in the desert, the fight with oneself. And if the Lord Christ was fighting on a much higher level with whatever it is the devil means, then Master Jesus could have been involved in that battle, or at least demonstrating to humanity that had to pass through it a lower expression of the same kind of temptations. Well, okay, I think it's time to move on. This is Esoteric Astrology Adventure. Number 122A, page, as I will say, something, page 467. And continuing with Esoteric Astrology Adventure in 122B, page 467.